Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. You know what tomorrow is? It's Wednesday. Wednesday, we always do mailbag. If you're brand new to the show, we always do mailbag. And so we take all of our voicemails, text messages from our text and voicemail line, and we relay them to you guys. It's been probably our most successful episode. Seems like a lot of our listeners really love that. And we really love that you guys continue to drop your texts and phone calls. So please continue to do that. You got about 24 hours before we record again. So if you want to be a part of tomorrow's show, hit us up at 331-979-1369. Always make sure to subscribe to Locked On Bulls at Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, we will be there. Matt, what's going on? How are you? Pretty crazy NBA playoffs last night. Unfortunately for the Trailblazers, they blew a pretty significant lead. But I just got to ask one question. What did they do to Myers Leonard's pre-workout routine? What did they put in his water? Because these last two games, it looks like the dude is a top 10 center in the NBA.
Yeah, that was nuts. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Disappointing exit for Portland. Kind of made sense that if anybody in the West was going to give the Warriors a fight, it would be the Rockets. But, even the Clippers managed to push the Rockets to, what, six games. So I was surprised that the Portland couldn't even get one win last night for the gentleman's sweep. But they have these great combination of stars in Lillard and CJ McCollum. And as you mentioned, Myers Leonard just playing out of his mind, you know, hoping to God that the Bulls are not going to, try to overpay that guy because the Bulls fans seem to be talking about that while watching the game last night. But
no, they weren't.
This was the third straight game where the Blazers coughed up a double digit lead, a near 20 point lead. And you knew it was coming when the Warriors were down and then started to kind of chip away at that lead. This is a team that is on their way to their fifth straight finals. It's a team that's, trying to win their fourth title in 5 years. Multiple future Hall of Famers, even with Kevin Durant on the shelf, they're just a better team. And they outclassed the Blazers. The Blazers just kind of had some really bad offensive possessions down the stretch, and the Blazers defensively are still a nightmare. And for all of the big moments and big plays that the perhaps underappreciated Myers Leonard had, you had guys like, Kevon Looney and Alphonso McKinney and the nobodies who have stepped up for the depleted Warriors, making big plays and creating extra possessions. When the Warriors really made that run in the second half, it was a lot of offensive rebounding. Damian Lillard in particular got burned a bunch of times on the glass. And you can't make mistakes if you're going to have a prayer to beat the Warriors.
Yeah, we talked about how the Warriors' strategy to just trap CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, and it seems like they couldn't figure that out throughout this entire series. But I got to go back to what you just said. Were Bulls fans really talking about Myers Leonard in what capacity?
Oh, yeah, they were. most of them being afraid that the Bulls were going to give him some huge offer.
He's still under contract
because of a couple of playoff games. I mean, this is the same guy that was getting booed, you know, by his own like home team fans just a couple of seasons ago.
I mean, he couldn't even see the floor.
Maybe because of the Illinois connection, people are like, oh God, like here's the next person that the Bulls are going to overpay. You know, it was nice to see him have such an impact on that game and the series. And like he got a podium interview after the game, you know, even though his team had just gotten swept. And, you know, for most everybody, it was a Damon CJ McCollum team. Everybody counted them out when Yusuf Nurkic went down. Myers Leonard had himself a solid playoff performance, and, you know, that's that. But, I, you know, anyone who was talking about some future where Myers Leonard winds up on the Bulls, just, I was just like,
Bulls fans can take a deep breath here because Myers Leonard's still under contract next year for 2019-2020 for $11.2 million. So if the Bulls are going to get him, they're going to acquire him in a trade, and I hope they don't do that.
Yeah.
But the Blazers have a weird situation with their front court. They've got Leonard, they've got Zach Collins, Enes Kanter, Scalabissier, and they also have Yusuf Nurkic, too. So I think a couple of those guys are going to be free agents this summer. But regardless, they have a loaded front court, and I don't know where they're going to put all those guys next season. But I digress. It was a good playoff. Sad to see the Trail Blazers go down, especially in a sweep like that, and without Kevin Durant. But good to see Damian Lillard. Looks like he's going to sign a extension with the Blazers for something around $190 million.
Yeah, dude. Do you see that final year of his contract when he's going to be like 34 or whatever?
What was the number?
52.5 million.
Ooh.
Ooh. 52 million for 1 year.
Ooh. That is a whole hell of a lot of money.
That's so many yachts.
We made fun of Chris Paul for the money that he's going to make at the back last 2 years of his contract. It's like 42 and 44 million, but holy crap, north of 50 million. And we're only going to see those numbers rise with some of these guys that sign this offseason, right? That's crazy. Between that and his Hulu money, how about Hulu, though, real quick, just capitalizing on Damian Lillard's playoff success and doing a great job with their advertisement, too. So I love those commercials, by the way. But good for Damian Lillard.
They're good. And honestly, like the Blazers were a great story this year. They contributed so many awesome moments to the playoffs. You know, they had a game 7 win. They had a quadruple overtime victory. They had, of course, Dame's series clinching shot. Like, you know, the Blazers were awesome this year.
They were. They were a lot of fun to watch. So that'll be a team to keep our eye on this offseason. I'm curious what they're going to do and how they're going to reshape their lineup because they got to do something. I mean, you got one of the best backcourts in the entire NBA. You got to figure something out in order to try to get pushed past the Warriors, get back to that same spot, make sure it's not just a one and done. But let's talk a little bit before we get to our second prospect preview, which we're going to talk about Brandon Clark today from Gonzaga. But before we get to that, Matt, our boy Jimmy G Buckets back in Chicago, and from what you were telling me, and I must have missed this, but Jim Boylan and Jimmy Butler having a dinner together. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so they were spotted last night having dinner at a restaurant called La Scarola in Westtown on Grand. This picture started going around the internet last night and then this morning. I believe it originated with Barstool Carl, who then had a post about it on Barstool this morning. Barstool Carl got a scoop from, I guess, like a friend who texted him saying, big news, gonna tweet it at you. Jimmy Buckets meeting Jim Boylan at La Scarola across the table from me. Photo evidence coming, and then takes a picture and sends it to Carl saying Jimmy wants back. Now, there's nothing about actually whether or not he was eavesdropping and overheard a conversation or a portion of a conversation, but the picture is very... You know, it's definitely Jimmy Butler. He's got kind of like a mellow hood thing going on, but it's clearly Jimmy. and it very much looks like the back of Jim Boylan's head. As someone who has been in close proximity to the back of Jim Boylan's head at that ping pong event a couple months ago, it's Jim Boylan and Jimmy Butler for
you
sure.
You studied the tape. You've seen the back of Jim Boylan's head.
I've studied the tape of Boylan's head. This is a picture of Jimmy and Jim Boylan having dinner together in Westtown. Now, of course, that is just going to start all kinds of wild speculation as to whether or not Jimmy has the Bulls somewhere on his list of potential suitors and is entertaining the idea of a possible homecoming. A lot of people saw his Instagram picture after the Sixers bowed out of the playoffs saying, you know, thank you, Sixers, thank you, Philly, as a sign that, oh, he's out. Like, he's saying thank you because he's saying goodbye.
That's so dumb.
Which, like, come on. He could just be thanking them for welcoming him and embracing him as a key part of the team for a playoff run. And I think, you know, Philly would probably like to keep Jimmy around. It's just a matter of how much money. Clearly, Jimmy's looking for a huge payday, which to me immediately kills any likelihood, even not even going into the fact that I think the Bulls are still happy to be rid of Jimmy. It kills any likelihood of him coming here because the Bulls can't afford to pay him.
Yeah, even if they gave him everything that the Bulls had in cap space, that's, we're talking about like $24 million, and that's if Omer Asik's $3 million gets taken off the books. You're talking about $24 million, and I think a max starts at, for Jimmy Butler, is going to start north of $30 million. So, I mean, you're not even anywhere near the ballpark unless Jimmy's cool with not getting a max and would rather go to a situation where he feels like he can still be the number one on a team and still have other pieces around him that he can grow with. But I mean, I'm not gonna completely count this out. I feel like that they might have a conversation or two, but to me, I can't get past the point of the way that things ended here, right? I mean, you had Jimmy's trainer talking about Gar Foreman as meeting better drug dealers and more trustworthy drug dealers than people in the front office. So, I mean, how do you get past that point, even if they're going to have this conversation? I feel like there's going to have to be some mending on both sides before a conversation even like that happens. And this could just be Jim Boylan and Jimmy Butler kind of catching up. And Jim Boylan had mentioned it multiple times about how he felt like he had a really good connection with Jimmy Butler while he was here. Right. He had a really good relationship with him. So this could just be all for nothing. It could just be them catching up.
Right, which when we've heard Jim and Jimmy speak about one another after the fact, when, you know, Jimmy was traded away and Jim Boylan has ascended to being this team's head coach, that there's a lot of mutual respect there, because I think in a lot of ways, Jimmy appreciated the fact that Boylan was like, you know, a hard ass, a hard nosed guy who was really tough on his players and demanded a lot from them. Because guess what? Jimmy feels the same way about his work ethic and demanding the same high level of effort and performance from his teammates. And it's why so many times Jimmy has kind of had these rocky relationships with teammates, whether it was here in Chicago calling out some of the younger players or in Minnesota when he was ripping on Wiggins and Towns. And even for a while before they figured things out, the way that he kind of had a rocky entry into Philadelphia. And it's mostly about that same hard-headedness that Jimmy Butler and Jim Boylan have in common. And it's this, you know, and it's that reason that Jimmy said things like Fred Hoiberg needs to coach harder. And it's pretty apparent that Jimmy did not have a whole lot of respect for Fred Hoiberg. But he had respect for Jim Boylan. So maybe Jimmy was just, you know, spending some time in Chicago, because I'm guessing he still has a place here. And, you know, playoffs ended, pop into Chicago before, you know, he goes gallivanting and, you know, vacationing in Europe or wherever, or whatever Jimmy wants to do this summer. So, yeah, probably just hit up Jim Boylan like, hey, I'm in town. Let's get together. Let's catch up. And I don't think it's anything more than that. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But before that, I want to ask you something. Here's just a quote from Jimmy Butler from a few months ago when the Bulls played the 76ers. Says, when asked about Jim Boylan, he says, Jim's a great coach, a great human being. I'm happy for Jim. He studies the game incredibly hard. He would teach me a lot. I think he's going to be great for this young group of guys they have here, and he wants to win. I think the city of all cities definitely deserves that. He goes on to say he's honest and real all the time. He's going to tell you what you want to hear if you want to hear it. And if you don't want to hear it, he's going to tell you anyway. That's what I loved about him. And that's who I am in a nutshell as well. So perfectly summed up with what you just said. They're basically like minds in that way. And, you know, the style that Jimmy Butler plays makes a lot of sense with what Jim Boylan is going to probably want to do next season. And I'm not saying that this is going to happen for sure, but I mean, it seems like the connections there make a lot of sense. I just don't know if Jimmy Butler is worth or willing to take a significant pay cut to play for the Bulls and play for Jim Boylan and come back and restart in Chicago. It's a lot of question marks, but like you said, at the end of the day, this could just be two friends catching up.
Tough relationships that would need repairing.
Absolutely.
I suppose hypothetically you could say there is a possibility that the Bulls would be willing to go into the luxury tax to bring Jimmy in because they assume
No way. You
add Jimmy to Lowry, Wendell, and LaVine and you have yourself a contender that's worth paying the luxury for. But Jerry Reinsdorf has paid the luxury tax once.
Yeah.
Like, what precedent is there to believe that he would be willing to do that, especially bringing in a guy who they decided couldn't be the best piece of a championship contending team, and that's why they traded him.
Oh boy.
It doesn't make sense on so many levels. Who knows? I'm very curious to see what happens with Jimmy this summer if he decides to stay in Philly, if Philly really wants to keep him, or if he, you know, wants to go to a big market and be the guy, whether that's going to the Clippers or going to the Brooklyn Nets or whatever, maybe going to New York. I'm really eager to see what happens with Jimmy. But I think those people that think that him having dinner with Jim Boylan means something about a potential return to Chicago, I think they're reaching.
If there's a possibility, let's just say if, hypothetically, would you be on board? Would you be excited if Jimmy Butler was going to return to this team? And how good do you think that this team is going to be if that happened? Let's go down the rabbit hole of hypotheticals for a second. How good do you think a team that is surrounded by, I don't know who you get at point guard, but you have Zach LaVine, Jimmy Butler, Otto Porter Jr., Lowry Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., those five guys as your starters, plus whoever you get in the draft, plus your bench, and some of the young guys that you have there, how good of a team do you think that how good can you be in the East with a team like that?
I mean, probably a 6, 7, or 8 seed.
So you're not better than Indiana?
I wouldn't say automatically,
you're
no.
You're not better. You're not better than, are you better than the Nets?
Not automatically, no.
So the ceiling there is a 4 or 5 seed, and it's just quicker at this point, right? Like, you know how I was talking about a few weeks ago and even leading up to that, I was saying like this Bulls team, it feels like their ceiling, if they don't get any stars, they continue just on the path that they're on, that the ceiling of this team is probably a 4th or 5th seed long term in the Eastern Conference that can probably grind out a first round win. But after that, probably not too much after that. You feel like adding Jimmy Butler will probably keep you at that same level and maybe slightly a little bit higher.
Yeah. Probably about that.
I would be on board with it, man. Like, if they want to talk to Jimmy Butler, and I'm curious what the money would be, it would be cool to see a lot, because there's a lot of fans who still really love Jimmy Butler here in Chicago. I love Jimmy Butler. I love watching him. And I hate the way that things kind of went down at the end with him, and especially that last year with Dwayne Wade. So if there was some kind of reconciliation between the Bulls organization and Jimmy Butler, I mean, this is really the only star that would be in a ballpark of wanting to come here at least immediately, right? Like, nobody else is coming here in the next year or two, and you don't have money to do that. But if you did have money, would you be on board with potentially bringing Jimmy Butler back?
I don't know, man. I mean, like, what? We just moved on from this guy.
But I feel like he's different than Noah. He's different than Derrick Rose. He's different than Taj Gibson because he's still at that all-star type of level.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean, didn't make the All-Star team this year.
That's true. He had a rough year, though. I mean, going between Minnesota and the 76ers and then being like the third or the fourth wheel in the 76ers.
Oh, look, I loved young, getting better, turning into a star Jimmy, but I hated star Jimmy. Like, great player. Some people think he's overrated. Some people think he's underrated. I think he's properly rated as a top 20 player in the league. Not top 10, not top 12, but probably top 20 right now. He was, you know, he made an all-NBA team. And I think he's properly rated, but I did not like the person that became attached to the player, and I think it did not do this organization any favors. And they didn't do him any favors
That's
either.
That's true, too.
I'm not saying that this is all on Jimmy, and the Bulls organization didn't have any part in the demise of what went on as they found a star that they drafted at 30. And there was fault all over the place as to how that relationship deteriorated and led to him being traded. But, I mean, it's like another example of, like, can the Bulls move forward instead of backward? Can the Bulls do something that is not so predictably Bulls? Why, you know, just
they
for
can't,
the love
dude.
Of God.
They can't. What? They can't. But.
Although, like, on that point, though, something that I've heard from the rumor mill around the combine is that there was some talk going on at the combine about the whole Derrick Rose to the Bulls situation not happening. The things that I heard about the scuttlebutt, if you will, going on at the combine is that the Bulls have very little to no interest in doing a Derrick Rose reunion, at least right now. The interest is minimal at best. So, hey, for those who don't like the Bulls doing classic Bulls things and staying in the same, you know, wheel that goes around and around and around with no real changes being made, no creative decisions being made, take that for what it is. Sounds like the Bulls are out on a Derrick Rose.
How much does that come on the heels of the fact that the Bulls dropped from 4-7 instead of going from 4-1 or 4-2? That's what I want to know. That's my question there. Is all of a sudden, did the thoughts in their minds change because they dropped out of the lottery and they found out that they may or may not be getting a point guard, and specifically they weren't going to get Zion or Ja Morant? Maybe they were still holding out a hope that maybe they landed at number two and they get Ja and then they can bring Derrick Rose back. But yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the dude had surgery too just in March. So that kind of, I think, squashed in March. It squashed any possibility of a Derrick Rose return because you're just looking at rehab and you're looking at trying to build back to where you were at the beginning of last season and having that type of success. I don't see it happening. And with the Bulls' carousel of point guards that they have and still can't even put your finger on one guy that you can rely on consistently, I think is a huge problem. You can't afford to take risk on a guy like that. So it'll be interesting, man. I know there's a lot of Bulls fans that would probably on board for Jimmy Butler to come back. I'm just curious where that gets you.
There are a lot of people in the fan base who think trading him was a mistake and hate it.
Yeah, we heard a lot from a lot of those people throughout the summer, and we still hear from people all the time about the Jimmy Butler trade and how it was a mistake, should have built around him instead. Right. We'll keep our eyes on that, though.
But, I mean, just, you know, we were talking about that Damian Lillard contract just a few minutes ago, and to me, that's always what it went back to. That was the main factor in the Jimmy decision. So I didn't think that guy was so valuable that he was worth paying, you know, $225 million for, especially in the back end of his prime when he's logged a lot of heavy minutes in the first half of his career.
It is very true. He has logged a shitload of minutes. I mean, just looking at his log, he's logged over 2,000 minutes in every season but his rookie year.
Yeah, that's insane.
Every season but his rookie year, he's had 2,000 plus minutes.
Somewhere she read Fred is having an aneurysm. Tibbs, you crazy monster bastard with your minutes. You ruined Joe Kim.
The crazy thing is in 13-14, he had 2,600 minutes. 2014-2015, he had 2,500 minutes. 2015-2016, he had 2,500 minutes. In 2016-2017, he had 2,800 minutes.
Wow.
That's absurd.
That is
absurd.
A lot. And that's even, okay, so how many, do you know how many games he played that season?
So, respectively, 67, 65, 67, 76. So he didn't even play a full season. Like, he didn't play a full 82 games.
So that's averaging 37 minutes a game.
Yeah, 38.7, 38.7, 36.9, 37. And in 2014, 2015, he led the league in minutes per game at 38.7.
Like, You know, no wonder you go back and think about that comment he had before he got traded away from Minnesota, where Tibbs had played him some, you know, like 44 minutes or whatever. And he was like, yeah, man, that shit has to stop.
Oh, I'm looking at his three-point shooting, though. It's a pretty tasty over the last three seasons. I mean, he was better in Minnesota in the 10 games he started there than he finished up with Philly. But 35% this year, 35% last year, 36.7% 2016-2017. So, I mean, he doesn't shoot all that many threes per game, but when you need him to knock one down, he can. So we obviously know who Jimmy Butler is. We know what the type of player that you would get if you did sign him. So, besides that, though, let's kind of move on. We'll keep our eyes peeled and our ears peeled for any Jimmy Butler updates as they continue. But that is very interesting, him and Jim Boylan here in Chicago having some dinner. And wonder if they're talking about player mutinies at all. That's one thing both of those two have sort of in relationship, right? Like, that's something that ties them together.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You got to assume that Boylan, if he was trying to butter up Jimmy and convince him into hearing out a Bulls pitch this summer, was leading his pitch with a head seat at the table of the leadership committee. You have to assume that was included, right?
The leadership committee only has like three people on it now, and nobody knows really who that is.
Can you just picture Jimmy at the leadership committee being like, you're
this
cool.
This is how it's going now.
You, I'm out. Everybody listen to me. I'm in charge.
Oh, maybe the Bulls need that, though. Maybe they need a good ass kicking in from a player, not from a coach, and somebody that I think a lot of these Bulls could respect. Maybe that's exactly what this Bulls team needs. But let's talk about some prospects now. And before we do that, just want to remind you that our episode today is sponsored by Hotels.com, Grip Six Belt, and Untuck It. Hotels.com, today's show, don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com, be there, do that, get rewarded. So, Matt, let's talk about Brandon Clark. We got some interesting responses about Jackson Hayes yesterday, and appreciate everybody who listened to that and were at least intrigued by the conversation Matt and I had talking about a potential scenario where Carter could be on the move if they find a borderline all-star type player, really good return, that could be on the table. So appreciate everybody who listened to that. So we're going to talk about Gonzaga's Brandon Clark today. Matt, what was the first thing that stood out to you in terms of his game, like going back and watching the film and just looking at some of his stats? What was the first thing that kind of jumped out to you about him?
Well, I mean, the thing that jumps out when I went back, and it was certainly a performance that I remembered from while the tourney was happening, was his 36-point explosion against Baylor in what was that, the second round?
Yep.
Yeah, 15 of 18 from the field. 6 of 8 from the free throw line, 8 boards, 5 blocks, and a few assists and a couple of steals as well. I mean, just a monster game that made everybody say, holy shit, this Brandon Clark kid can play. And maybe he's going to leap up a bunch of people's draft boards, because before him, most of the draft attention being paid towards and aimed towards Zaga was his teammate, right? Rui Hachimura. It's like now people are talking about Clark being a top 10 pick and Hachimura falling all the way into the 20s. And that just is another example and goes to show you how much big performances in the tourney can alter draft stock. Because a lot of people were like, Ja Morant, who, what? Yeah, the kid who has like some cool dunks on, you know, on Vine or whatever. And then they were like, well, let's see what he does in the tourney. And then he had a monster game against Marquette in an upset win. Same thing. When it comes to Clark, I mean, that 36-point outpouring was not like a regular thing. It was like, oh, my God, where did that come from? Because he wasn't that dominant of a scorer. You know, in his third college season, and his first was Zaga after transferring from San Jose State. But he still did average nearly 17 points a game and 8.5 rebounds. Like, that's nothing to sneeze at. He definitely has potential at the NBA level. I worry about his bust potential as well, though, because I think that there is, we're talking about with Jackson Hayes yesterday, I feel like his, you know, ceiling for offensive development and a well-rounded offensive game is kind of limited from what I've seen from him at his season at Gonzaga.
Yeah, I think the thing that I worry about most in terms of where the Bulls are drafting and what the Bulls need is I don't really know what position Brandon Clark's going to play in the NBA. Like, he played like a small ball four and even at times could slide over to the five for Gonzaga, and that's fine in college, but looking at it from an NBA standpoint, is he going to play the three, like 6'8"? And, I mean, he's listed on Basketball Reference as 215, but the dude does not look 215, man. He looks like a light 215 at that. And the Combine didn't give us any measurements or any weights on Brandon Clark, so he was one of the handful of prospects that didn't size out, or we didn't get a size for him. But still, 6'8", 215. I mean, you're talking about a guy that could probably play the three and the four, and when you talk about that, you still got Markkanen, you still got Carter, but the kid's ability to block shots, and we talked about that with Jackson Hayes, I think is incredible. Right. I mean,
he averaged 3.2 blocks per game.
Yeah, in
28 minutes per game, 3.2 blocks. That's insane.
And we mentioned it, too, in yesterday's episode, that he led the NCAA in blocks at 117. 117 total blocks for the entire season, I think, is huge. I think the one thing that just worries about me, and I shouldn't really be worried about that, is just his size in general. Not the length, but his actual build. He's got a super high ceiling, like you were saying. I think you look at his effective field goal percentage, you look at his true shooting percentage, you look at every stat across the board in the NCAA last year for Gonzaga, and Brandon Clark's probably in the top 10. So I don't know, and I think the other thing that worries me, too, is the conference that Gonzaga plays in. Like, that competition level, how does that stack up to some of these other prospects who played at big-time programs? And I get Gonzaga's a big-time program, but they don't play in a big-time conference. So I think those two combinations make me a little concerned about his game, but everything that you had mentioned, his ability to score, his ability to block shots, his ability to switch off and play on different guys on defense, I think is incredible.
I mean, it's a valid concern talking about Zaga's conference, but if you actually look at his numbers, as far as like conference per game stats and then overall per game stats, his overall stats are about equivalent, if not a little bit better in some areas. He averaged 16.2 points per game against conference opponents, 16.9 per game over the entirety of their season. And for the most part, those are, you know, the numbers are similar. His field goal percentage in conference was 68.2 this season. Overall, it was 68.7. So, like, as I said, pretty similar numbers, conference opponent or otherwise. Whereas, like, in some other ways, when you're talking about, like, mid-major schools, like, again, Ja Morant, for example, when you say, oh, sure, Ja Morant just dominated a bunch of Murray State's opponents, well, let's see what he does in the tourney. Can he hold his own? I don't think it's as big of a concern for Brandon Clark to say, well, look at the look at the competition he was playing against. To me, it is just more closely evaluating, you know, his production at the collegiate level, what we saw, what his ceiling might be. Here's just like a scary comp to throw at you, because it's one that my buddy Shinowski has used. I think he actually included it in one of his video breakdowns just a couple days ago, looking at Brandon Clark. Tyrus Thomas, a guy who vaults up to people's draft boards because of some really dominant play in the tourney, has freakish athletic ability, can block shots, but when you talk about the offensive development that can exist in his game at the NBA level, there's bust potential there.
That's crazy. That's actually a really good comp. And, you know, we talked about Tyrus Thomas, and we thought Tyrus Thomas was going to be some type of jump out of the gym, absolutely unbelievable, can't miss type of player, and he didn't turn out to be that. And that could have been more his personality than anything else and some of the other things that was up with him. But just looking at Brandon Clark's measurements from the combine, they actually updated it, and they do have measurements for Brandon Clark now. Height without shoes, 6'7¼". Height with shoes, 6'8¼". His standing reach is an 8 feet 6 inches, and then his wingspan is 6'8". So he does have a pretty short wingspan for a guy that's 6'8". I mean, it's about
for a guy his height. Yeah, that's a weak wingspan.
And then I was also too pretty spot on about the fact that I don't think he's 215. The combine has him weighed in at 207. So That is that's a pretty skinny front court type of player. So I think that's going to be something to monitor as well. And they actually have him listed, too, as a small forward and not the position that he was playing in college, which was more power forward and even at times small ball center. So
where I mean, you kind of asked this earlier, but, you know, I don't think we've got given our opinions. If you were to plug him into this Bulls team, where would you play Brandon?
So I don't think he would start right away, but if eventually he's trying to get into that starting lineup and you keep everybody, I mean, I think he probably plays the three, right?
Like plays the three?
Yeah, like behind Otto Porter, or if at times Otto Porter slides to the four and you slide Markkanen into the five, or you keep Markkanen and Carter on the floor at the same time and you plug Brandon Clark in, but...
Then the problem with that is you have a three who can't shoot threes.
True. That's
Brandon
a huge
Clark,
problem.
Last season at Gonzaga, took only 0.4 three-point attempts per game at a 26.7% clip.
Yeah, that's not great.
That is basically just a non-existent. So, like, slightly more existent than our guy from yesterday, Jackson Hayes, who literally like did not take a single three-point attempt. But in 1,040 minutes at Gonzaga this past season, Brandon Clark took 15 threes and made four of them. That is not anything that you can rely on to say, well, this guy could develop a three-pointer at the next level. Or it would take a hell of a lot of work for that to happen.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And, you know, again, like, oh, hey, well, look, here's Mo Bamba raining threes in an empty gym. Okay, that means nothing to me.
I love Mo Bamba, man. I still am on board of if the Bulls had their chance and opportunity to take Mo Bamba, they should have. And I'm going to stick to that. Although I do like Carter, and I'm glad that they got Carter over Bamba. But I still liked Bamba's potential last year. Regardless of that, though, Brandon Clark, first in the NCAA in field goal percentage this past season at 68.7. First in his conference in pretty much any stat you want to talk about, and top five in pretty much any stat you want to talk about, too. Defensive rebounds, total rebounds in general. He was second in total rebounds in his conference at 317. For a dude his size and grabbing 317 rebounds is a pretty damn good accomplishment. I mean, for a dude 6'8 and 207... that's pretty damn good for him. And just watching some of the film, too, I feel like he battles a lot, too. It seems like guys who are oversized try to box him out, but he finds a way to scrap and grab rebounds or keep possessions alive. So I do really like that about him. He's a scrapper. The only thing to me I think that is a little bit worrisome is the fact that you brought up is the three-point shooting. We talked that about Jackson Hayes, but I wouldn't be as concerned if Jim Boylan was more on board with the idea of shooting threes, but I don't know if you can bring a guy in that isn't able to shoot threes or doesn't have a three-point shot and all of a sudden ask Jim Boylan to develop that, because I don't think Jim Boylan really cares about that at this point, right?
I mean, I wouldn't say that. Like, Jim Boylan's not completely dumb. He knows that three-point shooting is a huge part of today's game. He just also feels that equally important to establish some dominant paint scoring in addition to being able to knock down threes so that you can get some open looks behind that three-point line, because you got to commit to your opponent's defense has to commit to trying to slowing down your paint scoring. Based on some of the things we heard, and some of it were sound bites that were not necessarily taken out of context, but I just think like totally exploded beyond reason, of like Jim Boylan saying, well, I don't know really how many threes we should take a game, you know, I'm not a big numbers guy, and things like that, that like Bulls fans hear that and their eyes roll out the back of their head. I think Jim Boylan knows that he's going to have to put a little higher emphasis on three-point shooting. And part of it was that the Bulls did not have a lot of reliable three-point shooters last year. Beyond LaVine and Markkanen, and then, you know, when they got Otto for a stretch of like a dozen or so games, there really was not a whole lot there to work with. Same like problem that Fred Hoiberg had, not having the right pieces to run what he wanted to run. I also think that the hiring of Chris Fleming will hopefully help in that regard. He certainly seems to be a more modern age coach who is aware that three-point shooting is something that they have to focus on a little bit more. But when it comes to particular players and like, well, can Jim Boylan help Brandon Clark turn into a three-point shooter at the NBA level? Like, well, I mean, no. It's not like Jim Boylan's some three-point specialist. Let's not, you know, let's not like mix what it is we're talking about. I think Boylan knows the Bulls need to be a more successful three-point shooting team, but I also don't think that he can like be like a shot doctor and turn players who aren't three-point shooters into three-point shooters.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem there. And two, you still have another guy that you need to develop a three-point shot pretty successfully, and that's Chandler Hutchison too. So I'm curious what Boylan's going to be able to do with him. And, you know, maybe something like you're talking about, some of these assistants that he's bringing in can help these guys, and it doesn't just have to lean on Jim Boylan. Regardless of the strategy or style he's going to want to play, hopefully you got some other assistants of people in that building can teach these guys how to shoot threes. And also, too, from your players, like Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Otto Porter, all of these guys should be able to help along some of these younger guys and develop a three-point shot if they want to. The last thing that I have on Brandon Clark, actually I have two things. One is I'm just looking at his non-conference games, and they're actually really good. At Illinois early on in the season, he was perfect from the field, 4 for 4. He had 10 points and 2 rebounds. It's probably his worst non-conference game. At Arizona, 8 of 9 from the field, 18 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 4 blocks in that game. And by the way, in the Illinois game, he had 5 blocks. Ridiculous. And then they went on to play Duke, so these were back-to-back-to-back. And then at Duke, he had 17 points on 7-10 shooting. And he hit 3s in both of those games. Those were 2 out of the 4 3s he hit all season long. So he had 6 blocks in that Duke game, by the way, too. So that is pretty ridiculous. If you're looking for a shot blocker, I think you should definitely not look past Brandon Clark. But the other thing, Matt, I was going to ask you too is just kind of reading Sam Vecenie's draft board from The Athletic. He had mentioned that he had talked to a couple executives, and I'll read this for our listeners too. It says, "But when executives reached out to me afterward to chat about where players were placed, the message from most was that they felt Clark was too highly placed. NBA teams are certainly mixed about his potential. Some executives are with me and believe that he's a top 10 player. That's where he'll feature on my big board. But the overall tenure around the league sees him more as a top 20 guy as opposed to a surefire lottery pick. Thus, I've slid him down 4 spots to the Celtics, another smartly run organization who could find value in Clark's unique skill set, particularly in regard to how it translates to the playoffs if his offensive game comes along." So he originally had him being drafted by the Minnesota Timberwolves at number 11, and he dropped him down to 14, where the Celtics have the last lottery spot. So that's interesting about Brandon Clark. Where do you think the Bulls would be in terms of, would this be a trade, like if the Bulls were trading back from 7, and this would be a possibility if they traded back to the teens or something? Maybe a deal sparks up with the Spurs, who I know are interested in Cam Reddish. Is that kind of how you see, if the Bulls were going to pair up with Brandon Clark, how you see things going down there?
I mean, I don't think the Bulls can get Brandon Clark if they trade down to the teens. I think Brandon Clark is going to go, if not top 10, like very soon, at like 11 or 12. I mean, just kind of as far as the momentum, and you know, it goes back to what we were talking about. Some of it has to do with what people see and hear at the combine, but a lot of it has to do with that last impression that players make in the turning. That Brandon Clark is a trending up, not trending down player coming into next month's draft. If the Bulls want Brandon Clark, and maybe it's something as simple as some front court depth, the departure of Robin Lopez, the uselessness of Cristiano Felicio, and maybe using him as a small ball backup 4/5, and hoping that he can develop into something bigger than that. I don't think that they can trade down significantly far into the teens and bank on him being.
Yeah, I think that's a good call too.
I think he'll be there at 7 if the Bulls really like him that much. But I don't think that he'll be there in the teens if the Bulls trade down.
Yeah, if the Bulls trade back, say just it's with the San Antonio Spurs, their first pick is at 19. They have the 19th and the 29th pick. The 29th coming from Toronto. So yeah, that's actually makes a lot of sense. I don't think Brandon Clark slips all the way to the last 2 picks in the teens. And if we're talking about a deal with the Spurs, that's where you would end up. So Yeah, that's interesting. I like Brandon Clark's game a lot. I just don't see the whole fit here with the Bulls, but it's good to talk about him too, especially if he does slide and the Bulls do make a deal. I think there's a scenario where the Bulls could have some interest in him. Some of these big boards, though, too, have a lot of guys that I see in the teens that are moved up into the top 10, top 11. It seems like a lot of people aren't completely on board with everywhere guys are solidified. So I see guys all the way as high as 10, and some big boards have them all the way at 20, 22. So it's kind of a mixed bag, and it's mixed between like that eighth or ninth pick and the early 20s. I feel like a lot of those guys can go anywhere between there. So there's a lot of prospects. Like Nasir Little is another one where a lot of people don't really know where he's going to go, what team's going to take a chance on him. So yeah, that's interesting. Brandon Clark's a good player, though. I think he's going to be a damn good player, and if he gets to a team like the Celtics, I will be pissed, man. The Celtics don't need another guy that they can pull out of the back end of the lottery and then all of a sudden turn into a borderline really good player, borderline type of star. And I feel like that's what that would happen with Brandon Clark if he went to the Celtics. It's just unfair, man. I feel like the Celtics always get these guys that they can pull in and then develop, and all of a sudden they become really good players out of nowhere. So
it's not just, I mean, you can't just call it luck. Like, you got to give the Celtics a little bit of credit for drafting well.
Yeah, no. I give them credit. I know. It seems like that's the way that the Celtics go, and I don't want him to go there because they do develop their players so well.
Yeah, no, that's fair. You could also just hope that the Bulls were better at drafting and developing their players.
Yeah, more the developing part than drafting, because they do draft pretty
the
decent.
The developing, yeah, right? They do. They draft well more frequently than they
Correct.
Draft poorly. And that is like the one thing that this front office is clinging to as far as like how the hell are these people still employed.
That's true too. Brandon Clark offensive rating was first in the NCAA too, by the way, in 2018-2019 at 137.9, and he was also first in defensive rating at 84 in the NCAA. So I figured I would give you that too. Offensive box plus minus 8.9, he was first in his conference, and that was good enough for fifth in the NCAA overall. I mean, you look at any of these advanced stats, and Brandon Clark is either top five or he's first in his conference and first in the NCAA. Win shares, defensive blocks plus minus, he was first in his conference and top 10 in the NCAA. Pretty much anywhere you go, looking at Brandon Clark's season last year, he's top 10, top five, or first overall, which is pretty ridiculous for a prospect. We're talking about borderline lottery potential.
I would agree with that. What do you think? How in or out of love with you are you on the idea of the Bulls taking a swing on Brandon Clark? So say like so the Bulls are at 7, and all 3 point guards are gone. So Zion goes 1, John Morant goes 2, RJ Barrett goes 3, Darius Garland goes 4. And then let's say Cleveland at 5 takes Jarrett Culver. Phoenix Suns take Coby White at 6. At 7, are you taking any of DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish ahead of Brandon Clark?
That's tough. I feel like you're splitting hairs at that point, right? Like between the potential of DeAndre Hunter, Brandon Clark, and Cam Reddish. I mean, Cam Reddish, a lot of people are down on.
Yeah.
So, at that point,
underwhelming hairs.
I don't know. I think I still would go with DeAndre Hunter because I know what he would bring right away to this team, and that's defense first. And with Brandon Clark, I feel like if you move him from the 4 to the 3, it's going to take time for him to develop there. I feel like you know what you have in DeAndre Hunter, and the dude can knock down the 3 too, and that's the two biggest weaknesses of this team. It's not enough 3-point shooting depth and not enough defensive depth. And I think DeAndre Hunter, if he's available at 7 and all 3 point guards are off the board and Jarrett Culver's off the board, I think you got to take DeAndre Hunter there if you're going to keep the pick.
I think if the Bulls had that selection of players available to them at 7 and they kept the pick and they didn't take DeAndre Hunter, C. Red Fred would have like an ulcer and perhaps a heart attack and or an aneurysm on top of that ulcer. And, you know, as much as I like to poke at Fred, that would make me sad. You know, I don't want that horribleness to happen to Fred. because y'all know he is obsessed with DeAndre Hunter. I was hanging out with him at that draft watch party, the lottery watch party, and he was like, dude, I don't even care if they don't get one or two or three. Like, I just wanted to stay around like four or five so that they can get DeAndre Hunter. And he was heartbroken when they fell to seventh because he was convinced that meant that the Bulls weren't getting DeAndre Hunter.
Oh, man. Yeah, if the Lakers decide to not take a point guard and they decide to take wings, I mean, you're going to see Jared Culver and DeAndre Hunter off the board because the Cavs also need a wing. So you're going to see RJ Barrett, Jared Culver, and DeAndre Hunter all off the board before you pick at seven. So you're probably going to end up with the point guard. But I like DeAndre Hunter, and I think if that situation played out where all three point guards were off before the Bulls picked, that's who I would definitely pick. And I spoke highly of him, too, even before the tournament started. And I said even at four, I think DeAndre Hunter would not be a bad pick there. So, but obviously things have changed a little bit, but... for me, if you had to pick between Brandon Clark, Cam Reddish, or DeAndre Hunter at seven with all three point guards off the board, I'm taking DeAndre Hunter. What about you?
Probably the same. I might be really really tempted to take a swing on Cam Reddish because I think like he has the biggest range of ceiling and floor. You know, certainly a bigger range than DeAndre Hunter does. But in both cases, so it's, you know, do the Bulls take a swing? Do they take a chance on a guy, or do they take a guy who, as you said, with DeAndre Hunter, like, you know what you're getting and you can get that, you know, right off the bat. But I think I would probably take either of them ahead of Brandon Clark, just because there's a greater potential there for either of that. Like, DeAndre Hunter's not like an exceptional shooter right now. And Cam Reddish had a pretty rough shooting season himself, but they certainly both have potential to be reliable knockdown shooters in the NBA, more so than Brandon Clark does. And what do the Bulls need? What does any winning NBA team need? A number of players who can knock down threes. And the Bulls have some, but they need more.
I agree with that, and I see the intrigue about Cam Reddish, too, and I understand that, and that's why I wouldn't be completely and totally upset, especially at seven. Like, if we're talking about taking him at, if we stayed at four, then I would be like, absolutely not. It's way too high at four. But now that we're at seven, I don't think that taking a swing is necessarily as ridiculous at four as it was at four as it is at seven. Just looking at the three-point percentage for Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter this past season, 7.4 attempts for Cam Reddish. He shot 33.3% from the field. And DeAndre Hunter this season, he averaged 2.8 three-point attempts per game, and he shot 43.8% from three. So he was good. He was knocked down when he did take those threes, but he didn't take a whole lot of them. And Cam Reddish, I felt like, was stuck as Duke's like main three-point shooter, and that's why you see his three-point percentage dip. Like 7.4 attempts per game in college is kind of ridiculous. So that's why we talked about, I don't know if it's shadowing, and it was just like Cam Reddish can only do this one thing and Duke only wanted him to shoot threes. But yeah, I think I would take a swing on him too. It's hard. It's like you said, underwhelming splitting hairs at that point between those three prospects. But I think that's where I landed. We'll talk to more about Cam Reddish later in this week too. We're going to profile him and talk about scenarios in which other teams are interested, and maybe the Bulls want to make a trade if they want to roadblock teams at number seven by snagging Cam Reddish. So we'll talk about that on Thursday. Tomorrow we will do mailbag. So get all your questions in, 331-979-1369. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you so much for listening today. Our show was sponsored by Hotels.com, Grip 6 Belts, and Untuck It. You can find us on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls, Himalaya, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We will be there, so make sure you're subscribed so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.